The content shared on Your Life, Your Wealth Network reflects the views of the host and guests of the program only and are not necessarily the views of Cordasco Financial Network or its advisors. This media production is educational in nature and should not be construed as financial, legal, or tax advice or a solicitation or presentation of sale of any financial products or services. Please consult a professional prior to making any financial, tax, or legal decisions.
Welcome to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network, helping you find clarity and comfort for your life and wealth. Now, here's your host, financial advisor and CEO of Cordasco Financial Network, Steve Cordasco.
And welcome to the Your Life, Your Wealth program. I'm Steve Cordasco. We're going to do a special feature today with Joe Cortese, who is with our investment team at Cordasco Financial Network through DeMayo Schneider and Associates in Chicago. And as many of you know, we like to team up with DeMayo and Joe and his team to help navigate and give us more firepower when it comes to the investment process at Cordasco Financial Network. Hey, Joe, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
We did a webinar for our clients at Cordasco Financial Network this past week. We had a tremendous turnout. I think you guys were very excited. People listened for almost the full hour that we were on and gave all kinds of good, clear guidance on the markets and where we're going. So, thanks for being part of that. I think it went pretty well.
It'd be great if we could get that type of an audience in normal times, but it doesn't seem to work like that.
We had a lot of questions come in on the webinar, and so we didn't get to all those questions because so many folks had questions to ask. So I thought I'd bring you back and kind of go through some of the questions that a lot of our listeners and followers directed our way. So if you're okay, why don't we jump into that?
Sounds great.
Let me give you the first question. To date, our portfolio is down approximately 20% from its highs. The Dow is down approximately 30% at the time of my question. So we're comfortable with the diversification strategy so far. But looking forward, what's the strategy should our portfolio drop, say, 30 to 40%, which obviously would make us very uncomfortable? Thanks, Al. I'll leave the last names out of it.
The difficult part is, even with a broadly diversified strategy, in times of extreme market volatility, correlations rise to one. And what I mean by that is all assets essentially across the board, except for cash, frankly, and maybe short-term U.S. Treasury bonds, they all tend to go down in unison. And that's because investors, folks, have to sell whatever they can to raise liquidity. Large corporations have to sell whatever they can to have cash on hand to fund operations. Individuals get scared and sell things. So the difficult part about a broadly diversified strategy is that, unfortunately, in very difficult markets, diversification tends to evaporate. And that's not unique. We saw that during the financial crisis, and we've seen that during past times of crisis in financial markets. So the key is how you respond to that volatility and how you respond to correlations rising and essentially all assets going down at once. And the correct response there is to stick to the asset allocation plan and rebalance as appropriate, meaning some things will hold up better than others. For example, core bond allocations, which today are actually positive in positive territory, those have held up better. So we'll take some assets from that side of the portfolio and reinvest it to the growth side of the portfolio that has decreased in value to add to that side of the portfolio at lower prices and lower valuations.
Okay, so in this particular case, this individual saying, look, I get it. I haven't fallen as much as others and some of my friends and other people that I talk to. But you know what? Even if the market, I guess that would mean the market would be down close to 50 to maybe 60% for this particular individual to feel the pain of a 30, 40% drop. Question is, in his mind, hey, you know what? I'm not going to feel so good if the market's down 60 and I'm still down 30, I'm better by half of the market. But I think he's saying, hey, that's when I might cut and run. This is a struggle that many are having today. How low am I willing to see my money go to then be able to stick to it, right? It's stick-to-itiveness to then when things come back to be able to get the upside.
Yeah. And as we discussed on the webinar recently, during the financial crisis, the peak to trough decline for the S&P 500 was close to 60%. It was actually over 57%. So from the highs in 2007 and 2008 to the low in 2009, the S&P 500 fell again over 57%. So it's not unprecedented for the equity markets to have a decline to that extent. But I will tell you that broadly diversified portfolios were back in positive territory within 18 to 24 months following the global financial crisis. So if history is any indication of what we might expect going forward, and history is never the same, but it often rhymes, you know, if we do get a drawdown of that magnitude, we'll be okay on the other end. It will take some time, but we will follow the plan and we will rebalance as required, and ultimately we'll be okay.
Yep. And that's the thing, you know, as baby boomers and those that might be in their retired years, the time element, that variable that goes into the equation to successful investing, that time variable, it's amazing how many people say, I don't have that much time. Well, wait a minute. I'm looking at life expectancy. If somebody reaches, I just saw a stat the other day, if somebody reaches age 80, they have 50% probability they're going well into their 90s. And so sometimes we have to manage people's short-term thought process of their lifespan. And I know, look, I just had a birthday, turned 54, and I'm like, geez, you know, why is time going so much faster now that I'm in my 50s? But I get it. You know, don't what you mean? Let's jump to the next question. And there's sort of two questions that go hand in hand, but let me start with this one first. Does a coronavirus have the potential to affect those retirees who are receiving City of Philadelphia pension plans? So I guess this can even broaden out, because at DeMeo Schneider, your organization, you guys manage over $70 billion in assets, and much of that comes from institutional accounts like pension plans, municipalities, and government entities that have their money managed to be able to pay pension obligations. Can you help with regards to retirees who are kind of seeing what's going on out there and a little bit nervous about whether or not their pensions are going to be okay? And to extend that, I know a handful of business owners that I've been talking to at length about how they're running their business, and they flat out said, we're not paying our local taxes. I'm not paying taxes on my property. I'm not paying taxes on the house in Florida or down in Ocean City. I got to keep a payroll going. I'm reiterating words that have come from business owners that I've reached out to, or business owners that I also have as clients, that are saying, hey, we have to keep some powder dry in here because revenue is not coming in, and therefore we have to have a priority list of who's getting paid. And frankly, I don't think they're going to come get my house if I'm not paying my taxes right now. So I can see sort of the pain point that Charles, who wrote this question, is asking.
And it's a difficult situation, no doubt. I mean, we can't gloss over the human tragedy that this is all creating. And then there are the financial considerations. And this is a real consideration. I mean, I live in Chicago. I'm in Illinois, one of the poorest states in terms of fiscal condition in the entire country. So it's something that we're watching very closely.
Yeah, no, we don't buy their municipal bonds. That's one of the things we have in our textbook 101. Avoid Illinois bonds.
Well, it's true. It's interesting. But I will say, while we're not buying some Illinois bonds, there are other types of bonds within Illinois that our managers are buying, that where we can see that they are backed by strong revenue streams. So there's, even within that sort of blanket Illinois issue, there's a tremendous amount of nuance. But no doubt, tax revenues, general revenues will be down for states because of this crisis. The issue is, what's the magnitude of that decline? How long does it last? I mean, look, if we have a scenario where we can beat this virus in the next few weeks and we can return to normalcy, you know, perhaps some of that outstanding revenue gets collected because people then are able to pay what they owe. And so, you know, while it's a temporary cash flow issue today, it may not be a long-term funding issue. We just don't know yet at this point.
Yeah. What happens on the investment side? Right now, many pension managers have a little bit more emphasis on the bond side. How much upside could be there on some of the bond strategies? And, you know, after the financial collapse in 08, 09, many pension managers were forced to get defensive, got a little bit more aggressive, and now the market gets slammed again. So investment performance will definitely be jolted here. What does that have to do for solvency of those that are receiving pensions in their retired years. Maybe they're in Florida or the Carolinas, or maybe they're just, you know, retired here in the Delaware Valley or up in your neck of the woods in Chicago. Should they feel safe that their pensions will not get cut and reduced or go through some type of struggle?
Yeah, it's a tough question. It's particularly tough to generalize, right? Like, it's tough to say how pensions in Illinois will be impacted relative to pensions in other states. There may be some impairment of benefits within some states. And I don't even know that that's a result of this current situation. Many states had used overly aggressive return assumptions for their pension portfolios and have made promises in the past that are very hard to see how they actually can meet those promises just based on basic math. So those are larger issues, and those are going to have to be worked out within each of the individual states. It could be taxes are raised. It could be, you know, new existing folks are grandfathered in at their benefits, but then new folks, either their benefits are reduced or delay when they can collect them. There are a number of different levers that can be pulled to minimize that disruption. Again, I'm not sure exactly how this ends. At this point, I think folks should feel relatively secure in the benefits that they've been promised. But I think you should pay attention to what your local lawmakers are talking about and doing and how those processes are working through local government, because there are some, I look at some states around this country and you look at the math that's embedded in these promises that have been made, and some of it is quite troubling, no doubt.
Another question along the same lines. This one comes in from Amy. I'm concerned about being invested in municipal bond funds because many of the major cities are having fiscal issues. I also saw in the bond market, looks like some individual municipal bonds outside of funds are having problems. Also, it seems many of the large cities have declared themselves sanctuary cities. Therefore, there's higher internal costs with less revenues coming in and problems at some of the big cities. What does that mean for municipal bond funds? Should I be investing?
We don't have any acute concerns at this point, particularly for the parts of the municipal bond in which we are invested. There's a range of risk across municipal bonds. It's not, you know, one municipal bond is not the same risk as every other municipal bond in that market. And frankly, that's why we tend to rely on active management. So we have managers that understand the credit risk associated with these municipal bonds that they're buying. They understand where these revenue streams are coming from, who's actually on the hook to pay principal and interest, called the ultimate obligor for these bonds, which is sometimes very difficult to understand. You actually have to dig into the bond indenture agreement itself to get to the bottom of this. But in terms of high quality municipal bonds, which is most of what we buy on the core side, the vast majority, we have no real concerns at this point that there will be widespread defaults. I mean, think about a state like Illinois. Again, the GDP of the state of Illinois is, you know, something like $700 billion, right? So that's a massive amount of revenue that comes into a state like Illinois. It's an extremely varied and robust economy, which gives a lot of flexibility in terms of policymakers and levers that they can pull and those sorts of things. A state like California has a gross domestic product of over $2 trillion, right? Like these state economies are bigger than many country economies around the rest of the world, right? So while it's something to think about and understand, and it's something we talk a lot about with our municipal bond managers to make sure that we're not missing any of these risks, by and large, at this point, there is no real concern of widespread defaults in the municipal bond market.
And again, you know, somebody would say touche if we take California or Illinois, the quality rating of those states, even though they're massive GDPs, they still fall down on the quality rating scale, obviously, because they're debt obligations, but and their outlays. And I think that's what both of these folks that are questioning municipalities are kind of feeding off of that and seeing, I guess, some of the alarming attention that's coming as the Fed came out and said that they would even take on municipal bonds, which I think they've now granted the ability for them to make municipal bond purchases, correct?
That is correct, yes. And that's more so to backstop the money markets than because there's concern about the default risk of these municipalities. That was more to make sure that municipal money markets had adequate liquidity to meet redemptions during the panic. And the good news about that is that liquidity panic that we saw 2 weeks ago really is calmed down tremendously. In fact, you know, municipals have rallied fairly substantially over the last couple of weeks following what was a bit of a liquidity panic in the market.
Right. Joe Cortese is my guest, and he's with our investment partners, DeMayo Schneider, who help us at Credesco Financial Network, our investment team, find good, sensible investment opportunities that match your risk tolerance. In the past 5 days, we've seen the Dow Jones Industrial Average go from 20,000 to 18, then over 22,000. For those of us that have been riding the market waves up and down, is there a point where if the market rebounds more, that it makes sense to sell part of our equity portion of our portfolio, lock in a short-term rebound, and then shore up against future volatility that may occur due to an extension of the medical or economic bad news, which could cause another major drop in the market? Thank you, Scott. And many are saying now, as news kind of showcases a rising death toll, will that create a second wave of uneasiness, fear, and protectionism amongst us all to kind of cause a market downturn?
Unfortunately, short answer is no. All the data points to the difficulty of timing markets and the fact that those investors that do try to time markets typically end up shooting themselves in the foot from a long-term return standpoint. There are a number of studies out there, but one says that if you missed just the 10 best days in the equity markets over the period 1980 through December 31st of 2019, you cut your long-term returns in half by, again, missing just the 10 best days in the equity markets. And the ironic part about that is that the best days typically occur in the worst markets. I mean, think about the 10% increase in the S&P 500 that we saw, I think it was just last week, if memory serves. So that's a great example. You had a new jobless claims number come out that was up and upwards of 6 million. That's just a mind-boggling number. 10 million folks filing for jobless claims over the last 2 weeks. There's no period in history even close to that, yet markets are up over 1% today, right? So if you had been just trying to trade markets based on that particular number, you would have gotten it wrong. So unfortunately, trying to time markets is the fool's errand, and you are much more likely to impair your long-term realized returns by trying to get in and out of the markets at the wrong time. The better strategy, the best strategy, which has been shown throughout history to achieve the longest or the best long-term returns, is to remain invested through time and rebalance when markets are lower.
Another one. Hey, Steve, quick question. We had a company contact us just this morning to buy gold. He insisted the market would tank today and gold would be safe. Of course, I ignored him because he was a representative from a coin dealer from a metals company. But he said earlier this morning, the market would drop significantly. So my question is there validity to buying gold? Is it really a safe haven? Thanks so much. Hang in there. You and the team, Karen.
So gold can be a safe haven. When we invest in on the commodity side, we tend to, again, prefer a broadly diversified basket of commodities, again, versus trying to pick winners and losers. But gold does not hold up in every market. Again, go back to the liquidity panic that I mentioned from just a few weeks ago, where municipal bond, very safe, high quality municipal bonds decreased in value fairly meaningfully. Gold was also down during that period fairly meaningfully. Again, because when investors need cash, when companies need cash, when you know the old adage cash is king, when that comes into the forefront, everything gets sold, including gold. And if you just compare gold relative to the S&P 500 or relative to, you know, other more traditional assets over long periods of time, gold has not kept up, frankly. So just on the face of it, based on the quantitative data, gold has not been a good investment through time in and of itself. It can play a role in a broadly diversified portfolio. But if folks are going to look to buy, you know, gold specifically, it should be a small percentage of the overall portfolio.
Hey, Joe, and this is not a question somebody brought in, but I tend to know what's on the minds of those who've been long-term listeners. I know somebody would want to ask a follow-up question like, hey, look at all the stimulus that's being pumped into the system. Wouldn't that be inflationary down the road and hence gold be a play in here?
Could be. That's the best answer I can give you at this point. We also thought there was going to be a tremendous amount of inflation following the financial crisis and the tremendous amount of liquidity that the Fed pumped into the system over 10 years. And inflation has been essentially non-existent. In fact, deflationary forces have been stronger than inflationary forces over that period of time. So again, it's really tough to try to call these things. That's why we don't attempt to do it. We maintain a broadly diversified stance. We tilt portfolios in the direction of opportunities, and we tilt portfolios away from areas that we think could be problematic. But again, not making wholesale market timing calls on any one asset class, any one asset, or anything like that. That over the long run is the winning strategy.
Now, Joe, real quick, you know, this is kind of sidebar. You know, I got to tell you where my mind is. A lot of people saying, Steve, you're so optimistic. Back in 2008-09, when there was a financial collapse, you know, you were very pessimistic, at least a year and a half going into that. And good to hear you optimistic. Well, I'm going to tell you a little bit about where some of my optimism is coming from as well. I was concerned about deflation, lack of inflation, the fact that pricing power was getting very difficult in the country. Wages weren't going up because we're in this kind of global crisis of no pricing power. And I know people who are retired are saying, well, why would you want inflation? Well, you need some inflation in the system. For example, people are living on Social Security. Well, retirees have a higher inflation rate than the average public. So it hurts them more if average 30, 40, 50-year-olds tend not to be affected as much by inflation because their incomes go up. But my point is this. This pandemic, it's ugly. We don't like it. It's a health crisis, but we'll get through the health crisis. Then we'll have to deal with the economic crisis. That's the fallout. All this money being pumped into the system, we may look back a couple of years from now and say, you know what? We don't feel the pain as much of what it was like to be bunkered down. And those of us that caught some of the virus and went through the pain of that, it's sort of going to be forgotten. But my bet is this medicine that has been prescribed to all of us to get through and not get into a depression and maybe keep us just in a mild recession or a recession, and it could be deep. I mean, look, it's going to be a deep recession. We can come out of it pretty quick. There's so much stimulus in the system. It may solve the other problem too, helping us get out of a recession faster, keeping us from a depression, but also putting into the system something it was lacking. And that is some fuel to get just some inflation going. You got to remember, the stock market does well when there is the right amount of inflation. A good chunk of returns from the stock market are because of inflation, and companies get pricing power on their goods and services. So just my sidebar comment, maybe I'm too optimistic in here, but I wouldn't be surprised if we look back at a moment in time in the future and look back and say, wow, that medicine that was prescribed, fiscal stimulus, as much as we want to be fiscally conservative in this country, maybe it was the right time to give us that dose of medicine, because not only did it help us get through an economic crisis, it also helped us go through something that we were battling with globally, and that is no pricing power, no inflation to be found anywhere.
Yeah, I don't disagree with anything you said. I think about then what could the impacts on a diversified portfolio be from, you know, accelerating inflation, managed inflation, but accelerating. And the impacts of that are, like you said, equities tend to do well during reasonably inflationary environments, not hyperinflation, but reasonably inflationary environments. And also the dollar tends to weaken, right? Which means that assets domiciled outside of the U.S. in other currency, in currencies other than the dollar, have a tailwind associated with them. So, you know, those are a couple of the impacts that we could be looking at on portfolios. Again, it's hard to time these things and say when they're going to happen. But I don't disagree. I think that these policies that are being enacted today could be inflationary down the road. And the fact that there is no inflation in the system today gives the Federal Reserve, gives our policymakers cover to enact these massive stimulus programs.
Hey, Joe, thanks so much. I really appreciate the work you, Joe Cortese, and your team at DeMayo Schneider, our partners on our investment team at Cardasco Financial Network. Thanks so much for all the good information. Thanks for being available. We'll do another webcast, but thought we would share with the public as a whole, all of you on the Your Life, Your Wealth show, sort of a look under the hood of how we're navigating different investment strategies and approaches to this current market environment. I'm Steve Cardasco. thanks so much for being part of the program. Joe Cortese, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Steve. Always a pleasure.
And if you need to reach out to anybody here on the team at Cardasco Financial Network, just shoot me an email, asksteve@cfnplan.com. That's asksteve@cfnplan.com. And don't forget, it's always important to stress test your portfolio. We've been stress testing nonstop since this crisis has hit us, and evaluating and pushing the pencil to retirement plans and the planning process that we put together for people over the years, and more than happy to send you information on how that works. Easy to go to our website, cfnplan.com, and see the different tools that you can use to help navigate this current investment environment. I'm Steve Cardasco. Thanks for listening.
If you're interested in learning more about applying the principles we discuss to your personal financial circumstances, please visit Cardasco Financial Network at cfnplan.com or call our office at 215-558-3500. We hope you'll join us again next time on the Your Life, Your Wealth Network.